Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, January 6th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Parliament surprises journalists today with demands for additional clearance from the police to cover proceedings, a move unsettling for media groups.
So for us, it's quite surprising. We would want to know the reason behind was that. And on top of that, if they think that they are going to stop the outflow of information from Parliament, that's a non-starter.
Government and its workers today failed to come to an agreement over salaries and yet to be paid bonuses, which an economist say is indicative of the government's failed policies.
There was no agreement on anything in today's meeting. The workers demand that the days when bonuses are going to be paid was not answered.
There is calm in Chitungwiza today, but omnibus drivers in Chitungwiza and around the country are reeling over increased traffic fines and commuter fares.
It's not fair. They should reduce those fares. Those are not going to be afford Guanamariu, can't afford. $100 fine.
Mavuku parliamentarian James Maridadi of the MDCT is free after a brief detention in Bedbridge for allegedly filming the border post illegally.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Journalists who cover Parliament today received new instructions that require them to get police clearance before approval to report on proceedings. As Ivan Chifera reports, media groups find this unsettling.
In a letter to journalists today, Parliament's Principal Public Relations Officer, Tanyara Zwalinda Manyemba, said Parliament will now be requiring journalists to bring police clearance and a letter from the news media organization they work for to attain accreditation to cover Parliament. This is in addition to the required Zimbabwe Media Commission approved press card. The letter, which Studio 7 has received, invites all journalists interested in covering Parliament business into Parks House Public Relations Department with the original ID card and Media Commission card, and in addition, two driver's license site photos, fingerprints forms cleared by the Zimbabwe Republic Police, and a supporting letter from the media organization. Although the letter provided no further explanation, Studio 7 has it on good authority that it's the security officials who demanded all journalists get police clearance and would be subject to vetting before being accredited. The security officials are reportedly not happy with the coverage of parliamentary proceedings published on online publications and the private media. Independent journalist Robert Tafmane said the new demands are without any basis.
So for us, it's quite surprising. We would want to know the reason behind was that. And on top of that, if they think that they are going to stop the outflow of information from Parliament, that's a non-starter.
Another female parliamentary journalist who declined to be named said Parliament's demands were too much, as it means that journalists would pay more for accreditation.
I think Parliament is asking for too much from journalists. And basically the fact that we have to be accredited by Zimbabwe Media Commission and then to be accredited by Parliament as well, I think it's just too much for journalists.
It costs $5 to get accredited with the Zimbabwe Media Commission, but journalists would have to pay more as it costs $10 to get a police clearance. Zimbabwe Union of Journalists Secretary General Foster Dongozi classified the police clearance requirement as unacceptable and told Studio 7 they would be engaging Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mudenda over the issue. Kumbirai Mafunda, chairman of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, Zimbabwe, said MISA was equally concerned and the whole move by by Parliament was an attempt to stifle the free flow of information from the legislature.
It's just a matter of adding another layer of restriction amongst what journalists do encounter. For information, as we have already stated, journalists are already accredited by the Zimbabwe Media Commission, and they are also required to be accredited to cover national events. We have seen it in Big Four and everywhere. And you also look at ZEC, also requires journalists to be accredited to cover elections. So now we have Parliament also adding this cumbersome process to journalists. So this, we see it as an attempt to restrict the free flow of information.
He added that it was very worrying given that the latest move comes after Parliament security officials tried to bar journalists from doing live updates from Parliament last year. Speaker Mudenda later made a ruling allowing journalists to use their cell phones and other gadgets to do live updates from the press gallery in Parliament building. Mudenda could not be reached for comment. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Workers hoping to pin government down to its promise to pay them their salaries and bonuses as mandated by the law left a meeting with officials disappointed today and deadlocked. The government, which had called the meeting under the guise of a National Joint Negotiating Council hoping to de-escalate the rising tensions in the country over pay, was reportedly uncommittal as to when bonuses will be paid. The cash-strapped government has been struggling to meet the wage bill for its 550,000 workers as its coffers are empty owing to the country's worsening economic crisis. Inability to pay workers that saw doctors and nurses failing to report to work for several days. President of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, Dr. Fortune Nyamande, has confirmed that health workers have now been paid, but says they might not report for work again on January 31st if they're not paid their bonuses.
Health workers, teachers and other civil servants are also bitter after government deducted a minimum of $45 from their salaries for pensions. The civil servants are arguing that deducting any money from their salaries is unsustainable as they are not earning much. But government argues it cannot sustain pensioners as it has not been deducting money since 2009. Reached for comment, local government minister Xavier Kasukuwere promised to call back but had not done so by the time of going on air. Chairman of the Apex Council, Richard Gundani, tells reporter Blessing Zulu that workers are disappointed.
The workers are disappointed that there was no progress in today's meeting. There was no agreement on anything in today's meeting. The workers demand that the days when bonuses are going to be paid was not answered. The days are not available from government side. They continue to express a commitment, which is verbal. But from the workers' side, from the workers' point of view, any commitment right now has to be made with clear dates and implementation where we start the process of paying. Coupled with this, again, from the worker side, we made strong representation on the deductions that were effected from the payslip, the December payslip, the 7.5% of the pension, which was quite premature in that it amounts to a deduction which completely erodes much of the take-home, much of the disposable income. Most of the workers are hardly getting anything in terms of disposable income. And there was no outright commitment to say that the pensions are going to be deducted. So the workers' grievances remain unsolved.
Your critics, Mr. Gundani, might say, are you not expecting too much from the government? Everyone knows that the government is cash-strapped at the moment.
Even given that situation, they can afford to pay a bonus and they can afford to pay our salaries. For us, it is a matter of priority. It is a matter of prioritizing this. And even government itself has considered that they can afford to pay the bonuses, but it is only a matter of time.
And that was Chairman of the Apex Council, Richard Gundani, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Commenting on the failed meeting, economist John Robertson tells Blessing Zulu that government's failure to meet its wage bill is a clear sign of its failed policies that need to be revamped.
The failure comes directly from their shrinking tax collection which is a direct consequence of the shrinking economy. And that, of course, is a direct consequence of the policies that have done so much damage to productive capacity. We used to have considerably more production from the manufacturing sector, the farming industry, and even the mining sector. Mining has survived better than the others, but it too is struggling because the prices are down. And we're now producing a shorter list of minerals than we used to produce. So in all the productive sectors, we've seen a loss of business. That has impacted on the service industries, the retail sector, the hotel industry, the banking and insurance, and all the other services are down. So the architects have no work to do. The quantity surveyors have no work to do. The building contractors, very difficult to get big jobs. There's lots of housing and extensions to housing, but the big city centre properties, there's none at all going up anywhere in the country. All of this leads to much lower tax revenues for government, and so the government can't collect the money needed to run the country, and the biggest bill in government is the wage bill. So that has had many casualties, but at the same time, the government does not overcome its extravagance. It is still buying new motor cars for ministers and deputy ministers and Reserve Bank governors and military generals, and all these people still get privileges, and the government's spending inclinations don't change.
But as things stand, what are government's options here to meet the recurrent expenditure?
Part of the answer is to borrow if you can't get the money from taxes. But we have such a poor record for repaying debt that nobody wants to lend us anything.
That was economist John Robertson speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Member of Parliament for Mavuku, James Maridadi, who belongs to the Movement for Democratic Change formation led by Morgan Tsvangirai, says he's safe and on his way home following a brief detention at Bedbridge Border Post earlier today. Maridadi said he was not in a position to comment further until consulting his lawyers. He was detained for allegedly shooting videos of customs officials and travelers visiting the country. Zimbabwe Revenue Authority officials also allegedly accused Maridadi of intimidating them.
Clashes between commuter omnibus drivers and police that took place in Chitungwiza yesterday have subsided. But the atmosphere remains tense as drivers question the hefty parking fines that the town's council introduced recently. The drivers say the fines are depleting their profits, as are corrupt traffic police who they say often demand bribes at roadblocks. The Chitungwiza Residents Trust condemns the move by Chitungwiza Municipality and Kleiner Africa of increasing parking fees, which led to the unrest in the town. The clashes left many commuters stranded and unable to go into Harare for business. Marvelous Kumalo of Chitungwiza Resident Trust tells us more on the issue.
To some extent, we can say things are normalizing in Chitungwiza following the clashes that ensued yesterday. But however, the residents are concerned that we have heard of reports of unknown vehicles and the people who are driving in the area that are not familiar usually with the residents of Chitungwiza. And there are suspicions that these people might be from the security sector, mostly those who operate without wearing uniforms. And those that are into vending or into the informal sector, mostly at Chigwanika and the Uriado shopping center, most of them were affected yesterday as most of their wares were confiscated by these rowdy and unruly elements that were taking advantage of the demonstrations that were carried out by those from the commuter omnibus operators, a considerable number have failed to operate today in terms of their day-to-day stores, but they are still afraid of the situation as it happened yesterday. They are still fearing that it might also reignite today and lead to them losing more of their wealth.
What led to these clashes?
The commuter omnibus operators were not happy that the council had hiked rent fees to $100 per annum, and this was done without their representatives. Those from the commuter omnibus association were not consulted by the local authority and the Kleiner Trading, which is a private company that is working on vehicle parking management in the town.
That was Marvelous Kumalo of the Chitungwiza Residents Trust speaking with us from Chitungwiza. Meanwhile, the clashes in Chitungwiza over fee hikes is part of a larger outcry in the country. Government has proposed increased traffic fines by at least 100%, while fines for running a red light are proposed to be increased from $20 to $100. As Sebastian Morfo reports, this is government's way of raising revenue.
Zimbabwe's natural resources, such as gold, platinum, and diamonds, have failed to make the country's economy tick. Now the government is turning to another source to raise funds, traffic fines. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa hiked fines for speeding, running red lights, and other infractions by 100% or more as of January 1st. This is the first time in Zimbabwe's history that fines have been used to generate revenue for the government. Tawanda Majoni, an independent analyst in Harare, says it is clear the government is desperate for money.
It has been struggling to pay civil servants. It has been struggling to fund key projects. And apparently it's looking at the issue of fines as one way of raising revenue. But that's a very desperate and sorry way of doing that. What government is actually doing is to look at crime as a source of income.
In the streets, motorists urged President Mugabe to reconsider the new traffic fines.
It's not fair. They should reduce those fees. $100 fine.
Cannot afford is a common phrase in Zimbabwe, given that most of the population is unemployed. That is the view of Chris Madamombe, a public transport driver.
The fines are not reasonable. It's caused a lot of corruption with the police officers.
From here, Madamombe slips into the Shona language, saying police would be asking for some cash if they see that I cannot afford the new fines. On Monday, Finance Minister Chinamasa told journalists that the new traffic fines would stand regardless of criticism of the idea. Zimbabwe's economy has struggled for the past 15 years, a situation President Mugabe blames on Western sanctions against him and his political allies, but most analysts attribute to corruption and a series of poor economic decisions. Few, if any, Zimbabweans seem to think that traffic fines can get money flowing to the treasury again and turn the economy around. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Tell us what you think about 2016 in a poll we are conducting online. Cast your vote at www.voazimbabwe.com. Don't be left out. Vote now at www.voazimbabwe.com.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
in our diaspora forum, Zimbabweans living outside the country say despite being away from home, they still feel the pain and suffering of those they left behind.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
North Korea said Wednesday it conducted a successful hydrogen bomb test in a move that brought strong criticism from world powers.
The French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo marked the first anniversary of a deadly shooting attack at its Paris office with a cover that is characteristically provocative.
The Islamic State group has executed what is believed to be the first female citizen journalist for reporting inside its territory. Syrian activist reported Rakia Hassan, 30, wrote about daily life in Raqqa, ISIS's Syrian stronghold, and the frequent target of coalition airstrikes against the group.
In our diaspora segment today, we are looking at how events unfolding back home are affecting Zimbabweans in the diaspora. Chairman Solomon Socks Chikowero of the Global Zimbabwe Forum in Johannesburg, South Africa, says political and economic problems back home are putting a burden on Zimbabweans working outside the country. Chikowero tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that Zimbabweans in the diaspora have the obligation to change things through engaging with the government and fully participating in activities that help build the nation.
In every situation, social issues, economical issues, and political issues go hand in hand. So you cannot separate them from one another. So the issues that are happening home, whether be it political or economic or social, they are affecting us as diasporans because we are the ones who are funding the economy of Zimbabwe. The bigger chunk of money going into Zimbabwe's remittances is coming from the diaspora. The diaspora is the ones who is feeding their families in Zimbabwe. And even the extended families that are being fed from the diaspora. So now that is becoming too heavy on us when there are so much disturbances in the country, both politically, socially, and economically, because it also affects us. It puts us at an uneasy position. So the things that happen at home, yes, they really affect us.
How best can this be addressed?
I think time has come now for the government to realize that it cannot continue running away from its shadow. We are the shadow of the government. And the government is our master, regardless of whether I'm a member of the governing party or not. But we as Zimbabweans, we are being governed by that government. So whether it gets us to be state enemies, but when we are in diaspora like this, it's time that we start working together. And the starting point to work together is one to make sure that we are recognized as Zimbabweans by dual citizenship. Two, we must be allowed to do a diaspora vote. We must be allowed to be voting from wherever we are so that we participate fully in the economy of the country, in the political issues of the country, even in the social. So how do we do that? If the government can accept that we are Zimbabweans, we can contribute to Zimbabweans, not only economically, but also politically and socially, then they must start negotiations, they must start dialogues with the diaspora so that we work together, so that by the next coming general election, people are allowed to vote from wherever they are. Most countries are doing it, so what's so special with Zimbabwe? What's the exception of Zimbabwe? It can also do it. So it can, and that is going to be for the benefit of Zimbabweans at large, not individuals, not individual organizations, not individual people, but Zimbabweans at large.
But what are you doing as Zimbabweans in the diaspora to try and address this issue?
Discussions are always there. We have always been meetings. If you look, for example, during the Government of National Unity, the GNU, we had some ministers who were coming from Zimbabwe to come and attend to these issues I'm talking about. We had the likes of Paul Mangwana and the likes of Douglas Monzora who were coming to South Africa so that we discuss these issues, and they have them. It's not that they don't have them. They have got our proposals, they've got our notes, they've got everything with them. What is remaining is for them to wake up from their sleep and say, but no, these guys from the diaspora, these are their proposals. Because I remember very well the other meeting we did, we had even people from the UK in the diaspora to come and meet these guys in South Africa from the GNU. When we were talking about the issue of dual citizenship, the issue of diaspora vote, and so many other issues. So the dialogue has been there, and we are still pushing as and when meetings are called for, and as and when we need to push them so that they keep reminded. So we always remind them whenever we are given the platform to do it. And if you look at it also goes with the types of ambassadors who are in whatever country. If the ambassador has got an open door policy, we go there and present to them.
And that was Chairman Solomon Sox Chikwaero of the Global Zimbabwe Forum speaking to Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
After more than a year of negotiations, representatives of Libya's two rival governments signed an agreement to form a national unity government. The spirit of cooperation among Libyans of every creed, which pulled them together in opposition to Muammar Gaddafi and his brutal regime, quickly evaporated after the fall of their common enemy. The divisive political struggle that followed destabilized the country, and Libya descended into factional strife and violence. Eventually, two rival governments emerged: the internationally recognized House of Representatives in the eastern city of Tobruk, and in Tripoli in the west, the General National Congress. The discord and lack of united, effective central authority created a security vacuum that was and is exploited by violent extremists and human smugglers. Clearly, the inability of the two sides to come to terms and establish a government of national accord spelled potential disaster for Libya and its people. After a year of intensive negotiations supported by the U.S. and UN, the two sides signed a final version of this document in late December. The United States has long pushed for an accord that would unify the many factions that pull the country in different directions. Libya needs a strong central government that will establish the rule of law, promote a just, independent judiciary, and develop strong institutions with the capacity to improve the country's stability, security, and flailing economy. The United States salutes these courageous Libyans who stand ready to rebuild a united Libya and who are determined to move the country forward, said Secretary of State John Kerry in a written statement. All Libyans have a role to play as the political transition continues. I urge all Libyans to support this final agreement and to unite behind the government of national accord, he said. The United States and the international community are ready to support the implementation of the political agreement and to provide full backing for the unified government, as well as technical, economic, security, and counterterrorism assistance.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 live talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts Blessing Zulu and Praxedes Jeremiah discuss with experts and you, the listeners, the infringements of human rights that sparked a protest in Chitungwiza among residents, police, and combi drivers.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you right back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Parliament surprises journalists today with demands for additional clearance from police to cover proceedings, a move unsettling for media groups.
A government and its workers today failed to come to an agreement over salaries and yet to be paid bonuses.
And there is calm in Chitungwiza today, but omnibus drivers say in Chitungwiza and around the countries are reeling over increased traffic fines.
And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye saying good night, Zimbabwe.